Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Healthy Gut Girl, Kitty Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I am coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine, and guess who I found in your large intestine? One of my new favorite people, Danny Roddy. If you don't know who Danny Roddy is, you are about to know, and you're going to be so grateful, so you're welcome. He has an incredible podcast called the Generative Energy Podcast, who oftentimes has Georgie Dinkoff, who I've had on my show before. Wonderful, amazing. These people are filled with so much information that is so useful to help you on your path to living a healthy lifestyle. And then Dr. Ray Peet is also one of his common guests on his show. So you should definitely download his show and write a review. And also check out his blog, which is Danny Roddy blog, I believe. Danny Roddy blog, DannyRoddy.com, DannyRoddy.com. And there's so much amazing information. Some of it, he's super clever guy. So some of it's very clinical, but most of it is just very, very, very useful and fascinating. So you should definitely check it out. You're going to love this episode. He is such a cool dude, and I'm really proud to have him on my show. All these recent guests that I've had, back from Georgie Dinkoff and Kate Deering and Jessica Ash and all these people, Jay Feldman and Kyle Mamonis and Leo, and all these people have led up to Danny Roddy. So this is kind of the circle of people that I have been introduced to in the recent months, and thanks to Constantine, and I am so grateful. So, listen up.
Yeah, and I have nothing to lose. I've Ted Kaczynski'd out with my
I was
beard.
Like, I like the beard and a little like growth up there.
It just I have nothing to lose anymore. It doesn't matter.
It's working for you. I like it. Well, that was one of the things. I kind of wanted to talk about your impetus to go Ted Kaczynski on us, because my husband and I have been out here for 17. We've been together for 17 years working in our wellness center. He's a chiropractor. We've been working with children with vaccine injuries and disabilities for many, many years. And we both suspect vaccine injuries in ourselves from childhood. And we've always been medical freedoms, libertarians. We're very much constitutionalists, like all that. And so when COVID happened, we were not like shocked, but we were also very suspect about the narrative. And so we said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to move. We're going to move to the freest state where we know the governor will shoot down any executive orders, at least to get us off the grid in the interim. So we picked Florida and we bought a house. We're like, great, we got it. Let's do it. And it's like, what, 37 months later, and we're having the hardest time, not because we don't want to leave. And we're in LA, we're in Venice Beach by, like, you know, Leo and some of your besties. And I'm like, partially it's because we're brick and mortar. So it's hard to just say, like, let's just start over after 20 years of working. Yeah. But tell me what the impetus was for you to finally just be like, peace out.
Oh, that happened in 2016. And so that was when the Hillary Trump election was happening. And so I'm kind of like you, I'm not like emotionally attached to some political idea, you know, I have friends on both sides of the aisle, you know, and I like talking about ideas and why people believe certain things, you know, and like, I'm more interested in the why than the what, you know? And so I was living in San Francisco, and I love my friends dearly, but they were clearly kind of becoming deranged by the presidential election. It was like, oh, this is ultimate evil, you know? And I was like, have you ever heard of like Epstein before? Like, there's more evil people than like Trump or whatever you think is like the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And so anyways, like we were talking about, like, I value growth as like a person. And as soon as I kind of acknowledged that San Francisco was limiting in that way, shape or form, like I always felt like I was walking on eggshells with my closest friends. And I was like, well, I'm also critical of the US, so why don't you put your money where your mouth is and leave and like try to live somewhere else?
You know?
And so it kind of got to a point where I was just like, and then Ray also, Ray Pete also favorably talked about Mexico just frequently, you know?
Yeah.
And so all those things kind of combined together and I left, which was like ridiculous. Like I didn't speak any Spanish and I got here. And I think it was like a day of thinking I made the biggest mistake ever. Oh, and then there's a, or there was a grocery store here called Via Organica. Okay. And it was a really small place. And I walked into it and it was like a mini tiny like Whole Foods or something. And I was like, oh, everything is going to be okay. Like I have access to this grocery store and I can figure
out
everything.
So they had some oat milk.
yeah, they had oatmeal. Yeah, Leo would be cringing at it.
But, no, so you saw, you found your, like, the things that ground you. You saw the, like, the, okay, I can get healthy food. I can get, you know, it's right here. It didn't seem so foreign all of a sudden.
Exactly. Yeah, it was knowing that and that I could do it. But, like, I mean, the first few years here was, like, learning to walk again, like, going into a 7-Eleven and needing something and not being able to say it and just like sweat pouring down my face, like asking for the most basic things. It was really humbling.
Wow.
But it's like, I think I'm a better version of myself for having done it, you know, because it was really hard. I got through it. My Spanish is still terrible, but can speak a little bit. But the ironic thing was I had actually like moved to Thailand in 2019. And the beginning of 2020 is when Corona happened. So I actually had to move back to Mexico.
Oh, and because Thailand really locked down.
Yeah, and I was not confident that they were going to be resisting anything. Like the culture is super infantilized and they will do like basically whatever the government says. And so I was terrified of having to possibly get some vaccine to leave. And so I basically tried to get back here as fast as possible. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in Mexico. Ray is extremely confident that there will be some level of freedom here that won't be in other places. Uh-huh. But where I am, it's called San Miguel de Allende or Guanajuato. Mm-hmm. And it like there people still wear masks here like all the time. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many people from America here that it kind of poisons the well, I don't know. It's like people used to yell at me on the street for not wearing a mask, like on the street.
Yeah,
it was pretty wild. But having said that, like it's too disorganized here for them to like roll out some vaccine program.
Yeah.
It's like people use cash and are like, it's just not the organization of the US is, I think, what makes all this stuff so scary. But if you move to a place that's not organized, I think it's much more inhabitable and you can break the rules and stuff.
Well, would you agree with the notion that the cartels have been in charge of so much of the way the government is run, and the cartels need people to have some level of liberty for them to run the way they run. And so they kind of work together with the government. So I can see like they need some level of things to remain the same, right?
Good point. I haven't thought of that. I don't know the full relationship of the cartels with the government. Like, for example, there's a famous, really nasty cartel called the Sinaloa cartel, mm-hmm. and they have a strong CIA ties. And so,
Oh
my God. and people have thought that there has been like a national policy to destabilize Mexico for a really long time. And so part of that was by sending weapons and drugs and things to, or resources to cartels, because the Sinaloa cartel is like more militarized.
Okay.
And now there's another one called like CJNG or something that's really militarized. And so, I don't know what's going to happen with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's kind of crazy to say, but it's like the wild, wild west nature here is what makes it safer.
Right, you know? Because it's more free, more liberty.
Yeah, you try to bribe a cop in L.A., you're going to go to jail. You bribe a cop here, you could get away with whatever they stuffed you for. And so again, I don't even pretend to know what the future is going to hold. I'm sure it's going to be as bad as I could possibly imagine.
Really?
Especially for people that do not follow the rules.
Yeah.
But I'll take my chances here, I guess. You know, I can't think of a place that would be better than this. And the one thing I'll say is I have met a few people that were just getting their temporary visas here. Mm-hmm. So if something happened in the US, they could bail and come here. And so I thought that was a pretty smart thing, because being like landlocked somewhere would, to me, be the scariest thing, you know?
Yeah. I'm not sure. We're still just like, gosh, what? I mean, certainly we're definitely just not in the right place right now, because we're in LA. And, you know, if anything's going to go down, it's going to go down here first. And it already is starting, you know? But yeah, I felt the same way back when the election happened in 2016. I knew, and my husband was the one who said it. He's like, there is no way, even if you love Trump, he's going to be so divisive, not even intentionally, but just that's what's going to happen. It's going to be a crowbar for this country and for the world. And it was way more than I thought it would be. And then as it started to get closer to 2020, I was like, this isn't going to go well. And we had a house up north in Nevada City, and that was going to be our escape, but that's still California. And we were like, okay, we can do this. And we were actually on our drive up there with a friend when we heard that they were closing down everything. It was March. And I'm like, should we just stay up here? But we started to see kind of like the division up there too. And it's a small city to be dealing with seeing the same people everywhere you go and knowing how they think and what they feel. And I was like, so we ended up selling it. And that's why we, you know, said, okay, let's go to Florida and then go from there. So I don't know. I mean, I want chickens. I know that. I really want chickens.
They're really fun. Really fun.
I'm going to have to hit you up when we get them, because I want to know about the repeat way to feed them, the generative energy chicken feed.
I'll figure that out one day. I think I'm still in a state of chronic experimentation, but it's definitely a new, I don't know. I have no clue what I'm doing, you know? And so it's a lot of really fast learning, rapid learning about this stuff, because you have like a life in your hands, you know, like
right.
you start
to really like them, right? They start to, have you named them?
ABCD. Yeah. Like number one, number two, number three, number four kind of way. But not, no official names.
Oh, you got to name them. That'll be it. Well, that's so cool. Cool. I'll have to hit you up for that for sure, because I'm dead serious. But okay, let's talk about, so I started mentoring my career with Dr. Robert Marshall of Premier Research Labs. I ran his clinic in Santa Monica. And so he was a big Repeat fan. So I had known about Repeat. And then Dr. Marshall passed, and I got caught up somewhere in the world of low carb, no carb, stuff. And then I met Morley Robbins, who I love dearly, who's been on my show more times than anyone. And when I met him, I was doing D, and I was doing, I think I was even supplementing iron at the time. And I was severely anemic. I had all these issues, couldn't get pregnant, blah, blah, blah. And I met him, and he's like, you got to get off the D. He wanted to be in my estrogen dominant support group, which has a little over like 20,000 members now. And he joined the group and started to like get people to talk the Morley Robbins root cause protocol. And it was helping me. Although I still ended up with the blood transfusion, but something about the whole protocol was great. What I had an issue with was the D. I was like, it didn't sit well with me, and and now I know why. And then cut to later, really going down the intermittent fasting thing. And this is when I met Constantine, which is my key into all of you guys, all the way, you know, making my way into your circle of peeps, all your besties, and blew my mind wide open. And I was like, and so I go into my group and I'm sharing all this info, and they're like, hold the phone. Like, you just wrote blogs about D, you wrote, like, what are you telling us now? Like, you sell estrogen? Like, people are like, what is going on with Kitty? So I was like, listen, guys, you know, this is not a religion, it's a science. And I have to change my purview, my perspective, if I learn something that makes sense. And this makes sense. And so my question, that was a long way around my first question, which is, why wouldn't somebody's D levels raise or normalize while taking D? And I'm talking about D with K, really high quality D, talking about all the good things, not some random Trader Joe's brand of vitamin D. Go.
Well, I think the liver is the source where that cholecalciferol is hydroxylized into the end product that they're measuring in the blood tests. And so I think if a person has some degree of liver problems or liver disease, I have at least one or two papers that say they usually need to take more just because the liver isn't converting it very well.
Now, you said liver problems or liver disease. That's like a big jump there. Could it be just like someone who's got a sluggish liver?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for differentiating. Like, but there's a, I'm sure you've heard of him, Broda Barnes.
Yes.
He was like the thyroidologist doctor. And so he wrote a few good books. One of the best ones is Hypothyroidism, the Unsuspected Illness. And then he wrote another book called Hypoglycemia. It's Not Your Mind, It's Your Liver. And the whole book is just about how the thyroid like regulates the liver's function, and your liver is like the chemist or the center of your metabolism. And so if your liver is de-energized from a lack of thyroid, it can't store enough glycogen and it can't perform all its local activities. And so I think that's why vitamin D is so like person specific. Like a person with probably good liver function might be able to get away with just like being in the sun every day or taking a few thousand units and getting their level up to 40 or 50 or something. But somebody who's really in a bad state, that they might need 10,000 IU or something. And, and I know that's blasphemous in the Morley crew, but something I just wanted to comment on real quick is like, there's a clip of Morley talking about how he sees the adrenals. And again, I don't want to strawman him. I really am trying to earnestly like present his point of view.
Yeah.
But like he thinks of things as starting with the adrenals, and he thinks the thyroid is from this clip, it seems like maybe relatively unimportant compared to the adrenals. And so Ray is talking about like the energy metabolism sustaining the person, and that has a lot to do with the thyroid. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying this person's right or this person's wrong. I'm just saying how everybody has like different starting places in health. Mm-hmm. And through Morley's starting place, he's concluded that like vitamin D is toxic. And then through Ray's starting place, which is completely different, he's concluded that vitamin D is very supportive of energy metabolism and anti-stress and things. And so that's why it's kind of like a waste of time to like get into some huge debate about vitamin D or B1 or magnesium or whatever, because like you just never know when the person's starting thinking about health and what causes good health and what causes disease. And mm-hmm. so people need to know like first principles or basic axioms and that's like the conversation that's almost never talked about.
Yeah.
And so people just like launch into debates on topics about carbs or something.
Yeah.
But the really important thing is like, okay, well, what causes good health and what causes bad health? And so, but it's like the farthest thing from these debates online.
Great, because it's almost like you're getting a bird's eye view by removing yourself from being inside of it and going at the minutia of things when you don't even know if this person is digesting their food well or what they're eating, you know? I mean, that's why I'm always like, okay, I'm the healthy gut girl, because I feel like that's always for me been my starting point where I'm like, well, okay, I love that. Yeah, orange juice, great. All these things, these supplements, great, but are you even digesting it? Are you absorbing anything? Do you have such severe leaky gut that you're not even able to, you know, uptake food from, you know, baby food? Like, so yeah, it's so true. Where are you starting at?
Right? Yeah, 100%. That intestinal disinfectants and stuff, if there are like 70% of the hallelujah emails I get are all from like people that overcome intestinal problems, because they can be so devastating to a person's quality of life.
Yeah.
Like, for example, after I got off carnivore, I had pretty much chronic diarrhea for, I don't know, more than a year probably.
Whoa.
And it was really deteriorating to my quality of life. You know, you couldn't eat anything.
Yeah.
And so, trying to figure out what the problem is and then trying to frame it in some kind of context that makes sense. That I think that's what everybody's trying to do.
Yeah.
But I think some ideas are more fleshed out than other ones. And so obviously I'm the biggest Ray Pete fanboy that's like ever existed. But I think his context is the most compelling, the most well thought out. And the hard part is Ray is like a staunch anti-authoritarian. And so he have you heard that Joseph Campbell quote? It's like, if the path before you is clear, you're on somebody else's or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's like the absolute hardest part to grapple with, is that like there's another quote by Abraham Maslow. And it's like, you either step into growth or step back into safety. And so the growth part is like trying to figure out your issues but like through your own lens, you know, and like becoming your own expert. And that's also not really celebrated in the health world.
Right.
The health world is very authoritarian, where you need to go to this person and they'll tell you what to do, you know, mm-hmm. but like only we know how we perceive, only we live in our own bodies, you know, and so we're the best experts on ourselves.
Right.
And so anytime you're kind of navigating principle is taken over by somebody else, like I need to email Ray to figure out what I'm going to do. That's like detrimental to me, you know? And so I think a lot of this health stuff is about like refining your center and refining your center and your navigating principle, because things are always going to change. So it's completely impractical if it's like, oh, I have to email Ray every single time something changes. Like that's going to happen throughout an entire person's life, you know. As the environment degrades, a person will have to find new answers for problems, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, trying to become your own expert. And so I see myself as like a facilitator of information that I think is good. And so that's what I try to do, you know.
Yeah.
And if people could talk to me or something and gain some insight they didn't have before, that's like fantastic. But it's very contrarian in the health scene.
I think it's, you know, I think that's what I like about the whole Ray Peet world is people really put the brakes on when you try to corner them into saying, what's the Ray Peet diet? And people are like, that stopped there. That's not actually how it works. Including he even says that. And it's so people like fall apart when he's like, no, you definitely could use a lot less protein. And people are like, what? You definitely could use a lot more protein. Or what? Like people just freak out. And I think in my group, when I changed my mind about estrogen or whatever, people are like, what's going on? Like, it's like their ground is being shook, you know, and they freak out about it. And it's so we try to just get them to, you know, I try to advocate for being your own expert, like you said. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Blake said experience was the source of all knowledge. So it's like, just experiment with things in a safe way, but then you'll gain insight about yourself that will be unshakable at least you'll have a foundation and then you can test it later, you know, and make sure that that was the right or the wrong thing or whatever. But that's another thing about the bioenergetic or Ray Peet or thyroid approach or whatever. Like, it's not like a super ethereal approach of like, for example, like mineral balancing is very, what does that mean there, like specifically, you know, and how do you tell if you are mineral balanced or not? I really don't know. Like, for example, you can have a different amount of minerals in the blood that's in the tissue. So you couldn't even really measure it if you try. And then those hair mineral tests can pick up elements from the environment and things like that. But I think you can more hang your hat on the bioenergetic stuff or the thyroid stuff by measuring the pulse and temperature. And those are indicative or a good proxy for the actual thyroid function. And so if a person has a temperature of 96 and a pulse rate of like 50, like that's like pretty solid low thyroid hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like the diet might be like completely superfluous in that it might be completely useless to spend like tons of time trying to perfect some diet when the person's metabolism is so ridiculously low. Like in that situation, they might want to investigate thyroid hormone. You know what I mean? Like they might have been so damaged throughout their lifetime that their metabolism is so low that diet is only going to do so much. And so those were conclusions I can't, not only for myself, but talking to lots of people.
Yeah.
I realized that people just want like a bump in the right direction. And whether that's from vitamin D or a new sugar or whatever, insert this therapy here, like they just need some nudge in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they can take over and start experimenting with a bunch of stuff when they feel slightly better.
Yeah, it really requires a certain type of person too, I think, to be that way, because a lot of people are so used to being, you know, doing like you were saying in Asia, how it's like, yes, we're going to do this because we're being told to do this. A lot of people are like that now. Like I noticed it in the group. And maybe not now, maybe it's always been that way. I noticed in the group, people will say, I think someone was asking about being in the hospital while they're pregnant and not wanting to get, I posted about the Candace Owens where she was forced to take, they were forcing her to do some blood tests on her newborn. And people were like, you have to do what they say, though. You do what the doctors say. Like, what are you doing? You're in the hospital. Your baby could be sick. Like, do it. And I'm like, guys, listen, you're either in the wrong group or you're about to learn some stuff about, you know, medical freedoms and self-choice and self and responsibility for one's health and your baby's health, you know?
Yeah. If I hadn't gone, so we kind of glossed over it, but like I was pretty ill in my early 20s and had gone from like doctor to doctor to doctor. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't gone through that experience and realized how like ill-informed they were about most things, yeah, I don't think I would have ever kind of arrived at whatever space we inhabit now, you know? Like, I mean, the amount of bad experiences I have with doctors is excessive, you know?
Yeah.
And like there was even an orthomolecular doctor, so like an alternative thinking doctor that I think was like $1,000.
Is that what that means?
Yeah. Like $1,000 to go see him. He was like super mean to me. He didn't like being questioned about. I wasn't being confrontational. I was just like asking him questions about what like tests meant, and uh-huh. He was so ultra annoyed by my questions.
Wow.
And I was like, man, something is so wrong with this whole like system, you know?
Yeah.
And so again, I think that I've heard this multiple times, but like people marvel at their smartphone and they think the same level of detail or sophistication is not is going to be present in the medical system. But
right.
when you realize that the medical system is like burned based on this like allopathic heroic cut, burn and poison model,
yeah,
that is like completely divorced from the idea that somebody can like heal themselves given the right circumstances.
Yeah.
It's like having a map of New York and Paris or something. Occasionally they'll get to right spots, you know, but it's going to be a messy situation.
Yeah.
But you have to experience how bad it is, to sometimes know that it's bad, you know? And when do people really experience the medical system? Like probably in the 30s or 40s or so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate to experience in my early 20s because I was, there's no answers here.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
What I know. I mean, mine started really well when I was born. Practically, I was so sick. But what happens when in your 20s? I mean, what was the ultimate thing that was happening?
Well, hair loss was a huge motivator, but like, I also knew that my hair loss was worse when I was like the most depressed or I was the most cold. I had like insomnia since I was a little kid, had asthma as a little kid, but also being like pretty pessimistic and shy and things, having like an internal world, but not knowing how to like explain that to anybody else, you know?
Sure.
And so I had like a list of issues, but once it started like affecting my appearance is when I was like, oh man, I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
And but the coldness was a close second. Like I used to work at Apple retail, like the stores they had.
Uh-huh.
And because there was so much electronic equipment in there, they used to keep the stores relatively cool, but I would be bundled up in like two sweatshirts and my hands would be like freezing cold.
Yeah.
And then the girls that worked there would be like in t-shirts, and I was like, what the heck is wrong with my body?
Yeah.
Like I can't keep warm at all. So that was like a through line through my entire like health adventure. And on veganism, I got like super, super cold. On carnivore, I got a little bit warmer, then started going cold again. And so I'm like lucky that I wasn't just like obsessed with my weight or something, because the coldness and the hair were like these shifted me towards Ray over time. And if I had just cared about my weight, maybe I would have stopped at keto or something and thought that that was like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because like low carbs made me cold just like veganism did, and so it kept the wheels turning in my head.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know anybody who is thriving on a low carb like their whole life, like years and years?
I think that's challenging because I don't think anybody's thriving, you know? Like thriving would take a better culture. It would take not like proliferating dangerous technologies like the cell phone, the 5G, and the even the 4G and 3G are dangerous,
yeah,
you know, and Wi-Fi routers and stuff. So like if all of us have some potential, it's been erased, you know, because our culture and environment sucks so bad.
That was heavy.
Yeah. But you know, on the low carb side, to actually answer your question, I don't, when people switch to low carb and they feel better, I don't think they're lying, you know, like,
the
standard American diet is so terrible that there's like, just eating slightly better on low carb, a lot better, is going to be like a huge boon to that person. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, like, this is completely subjective, and I know I'm probably going to get heat for saying this, but like, you can tell how somebody's thyroid function is just by their speaking, how quickly they speak. And I'm almost anytime I listen to a long-term low carber, they talk so slow. And so I would infer from that, people are going to make fun of this, I think they're mostly low metabolism, low thyroid function. But you could have a long, happy life having a low metabolic rate. You would just probably be missing lots of things, like nuances and lots of different areas of life.
I keep referencing this in my shows since I had Tom Littlewood on, because he talks about the 6 markers of good health. And it's like, do those things. If they're working for you and you still have a strong libido and you're sleeping through the night and your gut is good and you all the 6 things, he's like, then who am I? Who am I to tell you anything? Do it, you know?
100%. Yeah, if somebody was saying they felt awesome, I wouldn't say, eat more sugar or something. It's like, why say anything?
You know? Right. So I just want to close this up with the deep thing. not for my audience even, just for me to put it to bed, because I still don't understand what the Achilles heel is of the anti-D narrative, let's call it. What is the Achilles heel in the argument? What is it? You know what I'm saying? How do they contradict themselves? Where does it go wrong there?
So there's another thing. I'm going to get heat because I never like articulate this the way they want me to. They always say, you didn't say this or you didn't say that or whatever. So maybe I could cheat a little bit here and say on dannyroddy.substack.com, I wrote an article. I think it's called Vitamin D.
Bioenergetic one. Said it to me.
Yeah. Wunderkin, however you say it, and the orb Arbiter of Doom. And I tried to approach like every single argument I had heard over the years, you know, that was being proliferated. And I would have updated it if I had thought there was more to it, but I really don't think there is. But to my understanding, you know, their main thing was that the cholecalciferol is a storage, they'd always called a storage hormone, and it's not active. Okay. And so to them, the 125D, the calcitriol, is the active form. And therefore, you don't want the storage form, you want to measure the active form. And since your doctor is only measuring the storage form, the 25D, the cholecalciferol, the hydroxylized version, you could already be sufficient in vitamin D because your doctor is not measuring the active D. So the problem with this argument is active D is turned on in inflammation and stressful situations. And so, for example, when a person is not getting enough of the so-called storage form, an enzyme is activated that converts the storage form into the active form. In the parathyroid hormone, which nobody really thinks is good for you. Everybody's basically on the same page that high parathyroid hormone, it degrades your bones. So on the back of your thyroid, you have 4 glands called the parathyroid glands that release hormone. Mm-hmm. And the 125D, so again, the one they're saying you want more of, or is the really good version of vitamin D, is turned on in like an inflammatory stress situation. And so again, as far as I know, they're not contextualizing health ideas in the energy stress model, what we had talked about earlier.
Right.
Like any argument that I see, I have like bioenergetic goggles on, and I'm trying to decipher based on energy and stress, like real biological energy and real metabolic stress. And so Jim Stevenson seems like he's like kind of the guy that progressed that. He seems like a nice guy, and I think he's earnest. But again, there's another issue where it's different foundations. And I don't know what Jim's foundation is. I have no clue what he thinks leads to bad health and what leads to good health. Mm-hmm. But in the stress or the energy or the bioenergetic model, the things that are bad for the person that cause stress or inflammation turn on this version of the vitamin D that he's saying is the one you want. So, again, and this is all talked about in that article and more eloquently than I just said, but But one of the biggest proponents has just completely backtracked on this. And right. So I think Jim and maybe Morley are really the only anti-vitamin D people these mm-hmm. days. And so one last thing, and maybe we can button this up. But if somebody was like, I don't really know who to believe, maybe they could test their parathyroid hormone or their prolactin. And those hormones rise when the so-called storage form is low, the vitamin D, the cholecalciferol.
Okay.
And so they could supplement, if they wanted to, they could supplement cholecalciferol in olive oil and see how it made them feel. Because it would tend to lower the parathyroid hormone and prolactin, which most people are on the same page about not making a person feel good when they have high levels of those hormones.
Okay.
So that clarify it? Or
no,
just
it did. No, it helped. No, it helped. It totally helped. And I really should have read that article, and I apologize for not reading it. No Constantine worries. Had sent it to me.
It's very long.
Okay. Yeah, I know. That's a nice segue into testing. So what tests should people get? What tests should people get when they're entering this world of trying to just sort out, take responsibility for their own health?
The easiest are the Broda Barnes basal metabolic rate test. And so just upon waking, maybe getting a cheap like Vicks thermometer or something and putting it under the armpit and taking like two or three readings and taking the highest one, writing it down. And then they also could, I don't know how much Broda talked about. He doesn't mention it too frequently, but you could take your pulse rate in the morning as well. And so write that down. And the mm-hmm. thyroid apparently has like a circadian rhythm. So it's lowest in the morning and should be highest in the afternoon. And so they could get their underarm temperature and pulse rate in the afternoon as well. And so they could maybe do that for two or three days. And that would be a pretty good proxy for the thyroid function.
Now you can be turning over really normal thyroid panels, really normal. And these will that particular blood lab will not necessarily pick up these subtleties that are happening in a patterned way throughout your day, even fluctuating throughout your day.
100%. Blood tests are kind of like if I showed you like a Jackson Pollock painting and I was like, what do you see here? Like they're like, it's very open to interpretation based on what the person believes about the test. So for example, like the TSH test is like what doctors love. Like you're either hypothyroid when it's high or you're hyperthyroid when it's low. And like the dirty secret about this test is it can be really low and the person can be hypothyroid, and it can be really high and the person can be hypothyroid, or it could even be in the middle and the person could be hypothyroid. And so you would avoid that, those like faulty interpretations by measuring the pulse and temperature.
Okay.
And also like, That hormone mentioned earlier, prolactin, mm-hmm. like I have a reference that says, do not make the patient too nervous when you're getting measuring the prolactin, because it could be like artificially high at that time. Huh. And so just how nervous the person is when they're getting their blood work or the lab white coat syndrome or whatever can make the test worse than they probably actually are.
And so
again, this is why the pulse and temperature are so good, because you can do them at home in the comfort of your own house. You don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. So prolactin is something that, you know, you just don't think about, or I never did. And, you know, you think breastfeeding, you think certain things when you hear prolactin, but, I just talked to Jessica Ash yesterday, which is honestly one of my favorite podcasts of all time. She's incredible. She's so cute and amazing, but she was saying, you know, it was news to me that prolactin was actually Constantine mentioned it to me first, was that it was a stress hormone. And that's crazy. Like I just never even, and usually you may not even get that lab in a blood lab. So we're just being set off course when we get blood labs sometimes, and everything's fine, right? Everything's fine. So in blood labs, what should we ask for?
So I think I just talked junk on the TSH test. I think that can be semi-useful. And so I still would get that. It's like a relatively cheap test. Doctors don't mind ordering it, or you could order it from like a private company or something. But the TSH, the thyroid stimulating hormone, total cholesterol, not because of heart disease risk, but because thyroid has like an inverse relationship with total cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And so if the person's cholesterol is higher, say it's like 250 or 300, and they have a lower temperature and pulse, again, that's a pretty big clue to their thyroid function being suppressed. Mm. And then likewise, sometimes, especially young men with digestive problems, they have low levels of cholesterol. So it'll come back at like 120, like really deficient. And so that can mean they have like a bacterial overgrowth or something. So total cholesterol, vitamin D, the storage, the 25-hydroxy, prolactin would be good to get. Parathyroid hormone would be good to get. Serum phosphorus would be useful. And then reverse T3, but sometimes that's too expensive.
Yeah.
So again, I don't put any like massive stock into any of these tests, but they are useful for sometimes determining a problem because, for example, and I also think of them more for the person than for me. Like, and then there are some tests you can't guess. Like the cholesterol is really would be impossible to like guess what it was. Mm-hmm. And then the vitamin D would be extremely difficult to guess as well. So those, especially the total cholesterol and the vitamin D, I think those are some of like the most straightforward, useful tests because there would be no way to like estimate what they were per se.
Yeah. Okay. And then, okay. So the testing and then the D, got that out of the way.
Can I say one more thing about the vitamin D?
Of course, say it.
I don't vouch. I think MCT oil is pretty irritating and a lot of vitamin D supplements are in MCT oil. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't, if somebody's like, I took vitamin D and I feel like it really harmed me, I would be in complete solidarity with that person because I think, again, if they took a supplement with MCT oil, it might've irritated their intestine and caused a symptom. And so, products in olive oil are probably more well tolerated. And then I'm crazy. I actually put it on my skin. I don't even eat them. And so I think that's an even safer way to do it is to
really the vitamin, like a D supplement that's in olive oil, you would put that on your skin.
Yeah. I can't really even show you, but on my leg right now is plastic wrap that I haven't taken off from last night. So wow. Now you think I'm completely insane.
No, it's a little gross, but okay, that's interesting. So what about, okay, one of the things I had Carol Peterson on my show, she's a pharmacist who's like an epic progesterone expert and menopause person, PMDD, all the things. And she said that one of the reasons some people have a hard time absorbing progesterone topically is because they could be hypothyroid. And because the skin is not as aqueous or whatever, absorbent or whatever. But so that just crossed my mind when you said you could put the D on your skin. Then I'm like, well, what if, yeah.
She probably knows more about it than I do, but I think that is true. Like everybody's, the activity of their skin and how thin or thick it is would affect the amount that it absorbs. And so again, I would only use that as a last resort. Mm-hmm. Like if a person had such terrible digestion that they couldn't tolerate a progesterone supplement or they couldn't tolerate a vitamin D supplement, olive oil or whatever, then I'd say give it a go on your skin. But almost for me, it's more of like a peace of mind. Like I know that I'm not causing irritation in my gut, you know, and then whatever went wrong in my development that gave me like a sensitive stomach, I don't know how that happened. So it's just, I kind of bypass it by trying to put as much.
And you bypass it by trying to put as much stuff on your skin, which is interesting because all these children that we worked with that had like the gut dysbiosis in these children was so heartbreaking. We're talking like one poop every 2 weeks and they came out like white baseballs just covered with candida and just incredible. So we would actually put everything, including progesterone, on the bottoms of their feet and behind their ears or in their ears a little bit. Mm. And that was always great, but it was incredible because sometimes these children would be so hypo metabolic, like being in complete spastic presentations. And we would do mud packing, which is something that I learned from Dr. Marshall. And we would take mud and put it on their hands and their feet and clear their downloads, their energetic downloads. And then we'd start to mud pack vaccine areas and stuff like that. One kid who had a G-tube, like this kid's digestion was amazing. Crazy, crazy bad. We put mud on his hands and he got sick, started throwing up. We had to wipe the mud off and his hands were like yellow, like a phone book, like bilirubin had been brought to the surface of the skin. Like it was just available in his bloodstream in that way. Yeah. So sensitive. And if I hadn't had that experience with the children, I wouldn't have known how easy it is to absorb things through the skin, how like castor packs, how powerful they are. And you don't think, you know, people do a castor pack and they're like, meh, I didn't feel anything, but really like it can be so effective through the skin. Skin's pretty, can be pretty good.
Anytime I've mentioned it, there are lots of people super skeptical if it works, but I think it does. If I put progesterone on my leg, I can feel it within about an hour. Like I feel extremely tired and I want to go to bed. And wow. So it's, and then vitamin D is, that's kind of one of the reasons I kind of like push back on the vitamin D stuff is because, even when I was carnivore, I remember using it and noticing such a huge difference. Like, I think towards my end of carnivore, I was like super depressed, super sad. And I started using like a Carlson vitamin D and it shifted my mood so noticeably, so quickly. And then the other thing is I used to like, when I was carnivore, sleep till like 1 or 2 p.m.
Wow.
Like I would have like just, it's called like hypersomnolence. And then when I started taking vitamin D, I started waking up naturally at like 9.
Wow.
And for me, that was like revolutionary, you know?
Interesting.
And so, yeah, I mean, again, if somebody needs something like thyroid or vitamin D or what progesterone or whatever, and you replace it, sometimes you can notice so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's also on the skin, you can notice as well.
The vitamin D. So I really upped my vitamin D in this recent months talking to all of you guys and just putting you guys all in a little section and just like, I'm just like raising my D. And so my husband came home from Seattle. I went to New Mexico and then I came home a day before he did. He left his whole family was really sick, like COVID style, but like not COVID and like strep or something. And he was fine the whole time. Day before he comes home, he's sick. Of course, he comes home. I'm just like, I was like, how am I? I even wore a mask because I could hear it in his chest. And I'm like, I grew up with it. I was a very, very sick kid. And boy, if someone had a cold and I caught it, I would have walking pneumonia or bronchitis. Mm-hmm. I would be sick for a month. And so I just out of like being frightened, I like put my mask on and was like serving him food in the bedroom and stuff. And then I just got sick of it, took off the mask and just started doing my thing and made it through the whole thing, did not get sick. And that I got to tell you is a miracle. My point is like, I feel like the D for me was a huge change, a massive immune boosting thing for me. So cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I've heard lots of stories like that. It's not like, something Ray had mentioned maybe a few years ago is he thought vitamin D and thyroid were so similar that you couldn't even think of them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And in Broda's book that we had mentioned earlier, The Hypothyroidism Unsuspected Illness, he said chronic infection was the story of a low thyroid person's life. And so I think,
wow.
Yeah, these things are important for general immunity, but also just feeling a good quality of life, like being excited to wake up every day. So it's,
it makes me think about all the people that have chronic low-grade infection, like herpes and EBV and bacteria, Lyme, and you know, and how hard it is for them, and how they keep getting outbreaks, or they keep getting reoccurrences of, you know, EBV flare-ups or whatever. Yeah. And just thinking how many of these people are dealing with that, and it's like, oh, it's because I have EBV, or do you have hypothyroid and the EBV is getting the best of you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's something definitely to investigate. And the worst part about this is if somebody's like, you know what, maybe I am hypothyroid. They go to their doctor and then they try to interpret the TSH test and they say no, you know? And so that's the absolute hardest part about this is, again, and it would be in the person's best interest to check their temperature and pulse because those don't lie. Like those are more objective than your doctor's kind of like faulty interpretation of some blood test, you know? And also like if we were talking about this like 70 years ago, like a doctor would probably be able to pick up hypothyroidism pretty easily. But now it's like they rely so heavily on these tests and their specific interpretation.
Yeah.
And they never even like care about the patients, the symptoms a patient has.
Yeah.
And it's just like this ridiculous approach of like never actually listening to the patient, or even worse, the person could say, hey, I'm cold, I'm depressed. And they would go, okay, well, we'll give you an SSRI.
Yeah.
Like, and that's even worse of a situation. So,
yeah. That's true. I mean, it's that medical model, which is kind of even transferring into the functional medical world where these people now, okay, they're doing the exact same thing, but they're doing it with supplements, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So let's go back to thyroid, or we never left it, but let's just dig in there. So, okay, so Broda Barnes doesn't talk about synthetic thyroid, but you use it yourself. So can you like talk to my audience about that? Because right now a lot of them are on levothyroxine, very unhappy, very or maybe they're happy, but they are noticing hypo stuff still, and we're like, you should check, you should check. And so I'll get a client and we'll do the Dutch test and we'll get down to it. I'll say, look, I have a feeling we're dealing with some, you're running on emergency hormones here. Maybe you should start testing your thyroid and your pulse and your temperature. And they're just like, I don't want to because I already know my thyroid's fine. I'm on levothyroxine and I've been on it for 5 years. What do I do?
Yeah, okay, so just to get this out of the way, so again, everybody take everything I say with a grain of salt, you know, just a guy who researches stuff. But I don't think it's ever appropriate just to use T4 and so or levothyroxine. That seems to be just another medical error, you
You
know,
don't think it's
because
ever, say that again. You don't think it's ever appropriate to just take T4.
yeah, it would probably burden the person's liver. And so, you know, Keith Littlewood had done, I think, investigation on this, or when he was on my podcast, he talked about a paper of talking about that inducing fibrosis in tissues. And I think the issue is when a person has lower thyroid function, this is kind of what we talked about earlier, they have a slower liver function, and the two go hand in hand. And so the liver has to predominantly convert, or rather majorly convert, the T4 into T3. And so iodothyronine T3 is like the active thyroid hormone that has all the benefits. And so just giving the person more T4 to suppress the TSH, which is what the doctor is looking at, can burden their liver, which is already underfunctioning, and then over time make them feel much, much, much worse. And so I'm sure you're familiar with a kind of a famous forum called Stop the Thyroid Madness.
Yeah.
And this was mainly women who were like, I've had 30 years of my life robbed from me from my doctor who prescribed me levothyroxine like 30 years ago. And like, I feel like a zombie and I like can't wake up and I have all the symptoms of hypothyroidism, but I go to them and then they just give me more T4. And so it's just like an unscientific practice that is likely to make a person worse over time. And so anyways,
Wait, 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 wait. You said the word fibrotic. So what part of that is, so the T4, and because the liver becomes sluggish, it can start to make fibrotic, like tissue in the, like fibroids, like make fibroids worse, or?
I think fibrosis is just like a general malfunction of a tissue over a long period of time, like the overproduction of
Anywhere.
collagen. Yeah, anywhere in the body. I forgot, again, I'd have to go reference this specific conversation I had with Keith where he brought it up. We were talking about this exact subject. But that's not surprising because, okay, so the T4, something I didn't mention, when it accumulates over time, it could have like an anti-thyroid effect. And so I think it's basically burning the liver, which is the center of metabolism and the center of where you're producing the T3. And something Constantine or Keith have probably talked about is something called reverse T3. So when you have a bunch of T4 floating around, it can be preferentially converted into reverse T3, which is like an emergency hormone or substance that will slow the system down. And so again, if somebody was skeptical about what was being talked about here, they could go measure the reverse T3 if they were taking thyroxine, and they could see where it was. And it might be at the top of the range or something, especially if they didn't feel good or they had a low temperature and pulse. And so I think it's in the same vein as Broda Barnes, the T3 should always be used with T4. And a person's probably just going to experience problems over a long period of time if they don't use it. So Broda had access to desiccated thyroid, and desiccated is usually like a 1-to-4 ratio of T3 to T4. And so in a perfect world, there'd be all these distributors of like really boutique, nice thyroid products, but that just doesn't really exist right now. So there's Armour, which is imperfect. There used to be WP thyroid or West Pure thyroid, or which is super expensive. And then when I was using it in 2017, and I kind of talked about it a lot, and people were at like maybe 6 or 8 months later were telling me, hey, I'm taking that product, but it doesn't feel like it's working. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. I took a whole bottle and it felt really good. And then like a year later, whatever that company that made it, they sent like an email to everybody and they're like, hey, everyone, sorry, but like our boutique standardized thyroid product that's very expensive, it turns out that it wasn't up to potency. And so these people were all right. Like they were taking something that was not like what they thought it was, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyways, this is very hard for a lot of people to swallow because there's a very naturalistic tendency in the health world to only want to do natural things, even though our environment is not natural at all. But synthetics, synthetics can have a up on a natural product, especially if you can't even get a natural product, that's good.
Yeah.
But there are good products made in Mexico. One's called Sinomil and the other one's called Sinoplus. And I have no relationship with these companies whatsoever. But those have historically been very reliable. And so again, perfect world. They make a bunch of interesting desiccated products that are standardized and you could go buy one and use it. But the supplements we have access to are imperfect. And this is a situation where a T3 and T4 product that's synthetic is probably superior over a desiccated product.
Really? Huh. And then, you know, taking a thyroid glandular or taking a synthetic, you know, how much of a waste is it if you really aren't addressing the fact that you're running on emergency hormones, the fact that you're not feeding yourself well? Because I think that something that a lot of the women in my group, you know, they're mothers, they've got jobs, they're busy, they hardly get a chance to eat. So they're getting this information from me and from us, and they're starting to try to implement these things. But how useless or useful is taking any kind of thyroid support when you're just on in fight or flight all the time?
Yeah, I feel you. The adrenaline and cortisol can be from hypothyroidism. And so those generally have like an inverse relationship. So
how is that? How is that?
So something I'm super grateful for Ray for explaining. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could spend the rest of your life trying to figure this out, and it could be still obscure and blurry. But I had heard many people talk about the hypothalamus pituitary and adrenals, like the HPA, many, many times.
Yeah.
But Ray was basically of the opinion that when your thyroid function is low, those systems ramp up to take over.
Right.
And that's like really simple. And I doubt I'm blowing a lot of people's minds, but that's something I've really never heard before. And so anyways, the pituitary drives the adrenals. And these are where all the stress hormones stem from. And then to the intestine can release endotoxin, and that can be its kind of own independent source of stress. But so there's a paper by a guy named Menoff, M-E-N-O-F, that I can send you. But they basically say that thyroid and adrenaline are antagonistic, and they have an inverse relationship with each other. And so I could attest to that because I used to run on an insane amount of adrenaline. Whenever I had to do anything that I found to be stressful, my heart would like start beating out of my chest. And I'm not saying thyroid is the only thing that could lower adrenaline. Vitamin D could do it. Dietary calcium could do it. Just eating more sugar, eating more salt. There's many things, but I think thyroid is one of the main things that could do it. So this is always a situation of like, how poor does the person think their quality of life is, and what do they want to do about it? Like, do they not have any energy to modify their nutrition whatsoever? Do they feel like they need a huge push in a different direction? And like, go for it, investigate thyroid. Do you feel like you could really are you eating Wendy's every day and you feel like you could really overhaul your diet and that would be a good place to start? Like, go do that, you know? Like, it's like, how dire is the situation? And the person is the only one that knows how bad it is, you know? A lot of health people frame it differently. They'll say, I've heard that so many times, like, don't even think about taking thyroid till you get your stress under control. But I kind of under the impression from reading Hans Selye's work and Ray and all the contemporaries that you will adapt, you will compensate with stress when your thyroid function is suppressed. And so it's kind of like stress takes over the body and starts running things. It becomes like commander in chief when your thyroid function is low. And when your thyroid function is high and you're producing like an ample amount of pregnenolone, progesterone, and DHEA, it's kind of like always having a buffer against stress. Like, for example, there are papers on like parachute jumpers, and their cortisol will go up, but so will their DHEA. And DHEA is protective against cortisol. And so in a low thyroid person, they can't produce a sufficient amount of DHEA. And so they'll just, cortisol will be very dominant. And so it's, I am thoroughly under the impression that the low thyroid function comes first. And mm-hmm. so I don't see it as crazy to supplement thyroid first. Okay. And to try to move in a positive direction. Of course, everybody I talk to, some people want to supplement thyroid. Some people just want to do nutrition stuff. And like everybody's different and what their comfortability of like something is, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but like even in my early 20s, I was like, man, I've been experiencing health problems for a long time. Like I was really convinced that no diet would fix my problems, you know? And so that's why I kind of jumped into thyroid. And again, it's not just what you've done in your lifetime. It's like your parents' health. It's your grandparents' health. It's like, it's not totally up to you of how amazing your metabolism is.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how many x-rays did your parents get? Or like, how many x-rays did you get as a child? You know, because those things all conspire to manifest in some health problem at a certain time. And so it's just, and then again, not to harp on it, but like our environment sucks so badly.
Yeah.
And so like we're being irradiated by cell phone towers, you know, like it's just, and so I think it's just kind of, a lot of health people set like these arbitrary goals of like, you have to do this, this, and this before you can do this. And mm-hmm. it's just like, if the person, their life sucks or something, it's like, no, do whatever you feel is necessary to do so you can like feel better, you know, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You're right. It is. It's a little depressing with the concept that, you know, we have this, but, you know, there's things we can do, like we can go off grid.
That's stressful too, though.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure it has its own stressors. You know, I just want to say that, first, my partner and Ona passed away, 2017. And, then that's how I came on board, because she was in my group and I was helping support her. And then her husband asked me if I could come on and kind of take over what she was doing, which was product development and outreach and all that stuff. And so, you know, he told me that Ray Pete, all of his work with progesterone and hormones is the reason that Ona was able to start Ona's and was able to, make high percentages, because he bought some progesterone patents that allowed them to, and then he let them lapse so that anybody could use the patent. And I don't understand it entirely, because my partner's a little bit Asperger's and he has a hard time explaining things, but basically he's in great debt and honor to, and so much respect to Ray Pete for the fact that she was able to make really high doses, because we have a 10% and a 20%. And 10% oil, and she was able to stave off her catamenial epilepsy with these higher dosages. So it's just been tremendous. And now that I'm part of that and understand all of that now, and now that I've met you and Georgie, all of your guys' work and your conversations are contributing to me growing Ona's in a way that's really helping. So we have a product coming out right now called Luna Madre, and it's a pregnenolone and a topical pregnenolone that, with the help of Georgie's info and your guys' conversations, have just really propelled us into growing. So I just want to thank you.
Yeah, amazing. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
It's again, this information is so hard to find that the more people spreading it, like just the better for everybody, you know, because a lot of people are over low carb and stuff and over the idea of restriction and not having health metrics like the temperature and pulse. Like you take pregnenolone or you take progesterone, like it should increase the temperature, and so that should be something that could be measured and not something that's like oh, you might notice something. Like it should be real obvious when those things are working. And so I really like that, rather than like some mystery supplement that's supposed to give you vitality or something.
Yeah.
It's like, just like, who knows what it's going to do.
Well, interesting. I didn't know that about pregnenolone and progesterone. How quickly after you apply it or take it, can you test?
Probably 45 minutes, an hour later, maybe even quicker than that.
Okay. And if you don't notice anything, maybe your liver, maybe you need a break. Maybe you, I don't know. I know Ray Pete thinks you should take a break sometimes.
With progesterone, I think it's, he's, I don't know as much about the female body as Ray does, but like, he's pretty adamant that you should cycle it. And so I guess the liver can get used to it at a certain point if it's not cycled. And so I guess post-ovulation is the most ideal time to use it.
Hmm. Wow. Thank you so much. You've just been so fun. And I love it all. I love it all. And thanks for your time.
Kitty, total pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, that was so fun. I really like him. I feel like I have known him for a million years, and just a super authentic, genuine guy who walks the walk and talks the talk, right? Like, this guy is, you know, doing it all. And I'm super envious of a lot of his, as you could tell, of a lot of his choices that he's made in his life. I mean, everybody wants to go off grid and have chickens, right? I think since we did this episode, he actually named his chickens. And I think that's really cool. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Please go into the show notes and please check out his blog, DannyRoddy.com, and please download his podcast. It's on all the podcast platforms, I believe, on Spotify and I think Apple and all the other ones. And you can also listen to all his shows with Ray Pete and with Georgie Dinkoff. And it's just such good info, and you just keep taking bites out of it, and it's going to really, really change your life and help you on your path to becoming your own expert. Because that was his big takeaway, wasn't it? It's like, yeah, all this information is useful, and just stick it in your pocket and pull it out when you need it. But ultimately, you need to become your own expert. Like, you can't rely on Dr. Pete or Morley Robbins or, you know, Zach Bush or Dr. Malone or Dr. Oz or whoever your doctor is. You can't just hang on every word that they say. You know, you have to become your own expert. And that's really the moral to the story over the last few years, because you can see what happens if you start to swing from branch to branch of every expert. You're going to get confused. You're going to get lost, especially when you're hanging on to every word that someone says in a crisis like we just had. It's really good to know your own body. It's good to, you know, like, everybody was all about the ivermectin, not to go off the rails here. Everyone. And I was a huge supporter, a huge proponent. I was handing out the FLCC information to everybody who wanted it, to, you know, figure out how they can get a hold of it if they needed it, etc. But I was kind of hesitant to just jump right on it. And I was like, you know, I get it. I get that it's a miracle drug, but it's still a drug. And so, you know, you have to learn your body, learn how things feel in your hand, how things feel when you read it, when you read about it. All that stuff is important. You know, you have to trust yourself, because you have an intuitive doctor within you. Ooh, that's cool. Maybe that's what I'll call this episode, the intuitive doctor within you. Anyway, as usual, make sure you go to us.onasnatural.com and use your coupon codes that are in the show notes. Get some discounts, get some calm cream so you can calm yourself down. And also join us on the Estrogen Dominant Support Group on Facebook. Please come and join us. We're growing very fast and we're having a lot of fun and helping each other with our struggles and laughing a lot. All right, friends, thank you so much.